This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Brian Riedel with the Manhattan Institute, senior fellow. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
You know, Brian, I mean, this is going back and forth. We can't come to consensus on issues. And not only that, we can't come to a consensus as to who's to blame as to why we keep having this Groundhog Day where we keep revisiting this government shutdown issue.
Yeah, you know, it's 84% of Americans are tired of government shutdowns, according to a recent poll. But what ends up happening is in 2013 as well as 2018, one party decides to hold the spending bills hostage to an outside demand. In 2013, the Republicans held the spending bills hostage to wanting to repeal Obamacare. And in 2018, Democrats held the spending bills hostage to immigration reform. And both times, they ended up having to back down because the American people are tired of these spending bills being held hostage like this.
So why is it that we just can't come to some resolution, and I think you talk about this, of having a bill passed in Congress that prohibits this conduct and this activity so that we don't have to go through this charade all the time?
Legislation. Senator Rob Portman, who I used to work for, put out legislation every year since 2013 that would ban government shutdowns. It would essentially say that if you get to the end of the year and you don't have new spending bills in place for the new year, you automatically just continue at last year's level. That's usually what they do anyway when they can pass a continuing resolution. This would just make it automatic so that nobody could hold up the bill and hold it hostage for something else. He would just say, whatever rate you were spending at last year, you continue spending at that year until we finish the spending bills. Senator Portman put that bill on the floor in 2013, and the Republicans all voted for it, and the Democrats all voted against it, and it got defeated.
You know, because that it really highlights, like, when we're going into the midterm elections here, that this would remove the misdirection and smoke screens that are constantly sleight of hand, that's constantly going on in Congress's interaction with the media and trying to slant this issue or slant that.
Exactly. It would just make it much, much easier for everybody. It would make it easier for government agencies who could actually have some planning and ahead of time and not have to worry that they're going to be furloughed and have their budgets immediately falling to zero. It would help individuals who depend on government services or, you know, who go to national parks or whatever, know that the programs are going to be there. And it would just, it would deal with the exhaustion voters feel. You know, every time you turn on the news and look at Congress, there's some high wire fight and brawl going on down to the wire on the debt limit or a government shutdown. And that just leads to complete exhaustion and a view that, you know, government is paralyzed and out of control.
You know, with the threats that go back and forth on this and that and the misdirection, sometimes I get the feeling that we actually have lost the identity of the issue. And I don't know what it takes sometimes, and in many respects, I believe it's actually crisis, before we actually are able to regroup, sit down, and begin to have an intelligent conversation about the issue.
Yeah, I mean, this is part of the partisan warfare in Washington. I mean, Republicans and Democrats right now are both using every parliamentary procedure and tactic they can to run over the other. You kind of had a breakdown of the normal argument and debate and way of passing bills in Washington that you used to have. Now we go from crisis to crisis with each party. How can we create a crisis in order to force the other side to capitulate? And government shutdowns are one way to create an artificial crisis in order to force the other side. And you kind of just lose sight of the basic job of just operating the government and funding the programs. you basically just lose sight of it because it's all warfare right now.
Let me ask you, because we get a lot of questions from our listening audience about the party leadership of the House and the party leadership of the Senate, I mean, within the same party. It seems like they're not even on the same side of the issue sometimes. Is that just for show or is that real?
It's real. And often it's because the rank and file want different things. You know, in the House, Speaker Ryan is basically having to babysit a lot of different factions. There you have, you know, the Freedom Caucus that wants pretty conservative goals. You have the moderates in the House who don't. In the Senate, you just kind of have different lawmakers who were elected statewide and who therefore have different priorities. And so, not to defend, you know, McConnell and Ryan, because I think that they make some mistakes, but they're essentially babysitting caucuses that have vastly different agendas because they represent vastly different constituencies, especially in the House, where a lot of Republicans represent far-right districts and a lot of Democrats represent far-left districts. And so there's a lot more aggressiveness in the House. And it's just it's really tough to herd cats.
Well, Brian, Mitch McConnell just announced on the Senate floor and on Twitter that they, you know, have reached a deal on the Senate side. Mm-hmm. And within seconds, obviously, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, Democrat on the House side, said they oppose this plan. And she's been speaking since 10 a.m. this morning.
Yeah, this is a House filibuster. I'm not really used to this. she's gone longer than any State of the Union address ever, and it's not even being interrupted by applause. This is the partisanship of Washington. I will say that House Democrats oppose the deal, but Senate Democrats support it. So former Speaker Pelosi doesn't even really have her own full party on board with her opposition. Although I'll tell you this, as a taxpayer, I'm pretty upset about this new deal. It's looking right now like $300 to $400 billion busting the spending caps. And so personally, I would be opposing it myself.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you think about this, all of the battle that we did on the tax reform and things of that nature, a lot of that can go out of the window on the implications just by busting these caps and increasing the budget by $300 to $400 billion.
It's amazing. I mean, this is on a yearly level, this is going to be bigger than the tax cuts for the next 2 years. This is going to cost more than the tax cuts. And, you know, Republicans fought so hard to get these spending caps in 2011. We had the big deal with the debt limit, where Republicans, you know, were looking to default on the debt limit unless we get these spending caps, and President Obama agreed to it. And Republicans have spent the last 6 years bragging that we got these great spending caps in place. And then amazingly, you get a full Republican government, House, Senate, and President, and the first thing they do is bust the caps by $300 billion. I mean, as a fiscal conservative, I'm looking at this going, what the heck is going on?
I'm in the same position. Every time I think I know a little bit about what goes in Congress, I get hit with something from left field where I feel like I know nothing about the operations of Congress.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really disappointing because, again, you know, Republicans run on fiscal responsibility. They spent 8 years criticizing President Obama and saying, if you put us in charge, we're finally going to cut spending and balance the budget. Well, I have to say, in the last year, they raised the debt limit without any spending cuts. They're talking about bringing back pork barrel earmarks. They haven't gotten rid of any programs, and now they're busting the caps by $300 billion. I mean, this is even, you know, more fiscally liberal than the Democrats were over the last couple of years when they held the White House.
How many years did we hear about pork barrel earmarks? And it, I mean, that, to me, that's a huge departure of what the Republicans campaigned on for so long.
It's remarkable. They lost Congress in 2006 in large part because of the Bridge to Nowhere, all the pork, Jack Abramoff, the earmark favor factory. Exit polls in 2006, when the Republicans lost Congress, ranked pork and corruption as the number one issue why they lost Congress. So I find it remarkable that after banning earmarks in 2010, which they had promised when they got back the majority, 8 years later, they're just going to repeat the same mistake and go right back to the earmarks that cost them Congress. When I listen to people who talk about how angry they are with the government and how angry they are with Congress, I've never heard someone say what we need is more pork.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never heard anybody say that. And so this strikes me as completely tone deaf.
And, you know, is this part of this zero-sum game just all about the 2018 midterms?
A lot of it, I think, is. I think Republicans are nervous about the election. And they're saying, well, if we can get more pork and bring home the bacon, we can help ourselves in 2018. I think that's probably where they're coming from. I think what they will learn is that this isn't what's going to drive voters to the polls. Ever since they got rid of pork, they've held the majority for 8 years. They've gotten reelected. They don't need pork to win elections. They need to do their job, reforming the tax code, safeguarding national security.
When we talk about this two-year deal that they say that they're working out, what the cynical side of me says, what does that mean on the election timeline?
Well, it means that they're going to go into election season bragging about the spending they're bringing home. It looks like about $160 billion of the new spending is for defense, which I agree, defense has been cut to the bone in the last couple of years. It's actually dropping below 3% of GDP for the first time since the 1930s. But usually we offset these with cuts elsewhere. Well, Republicans are going to brag about the defense increase. Democrats are going to go home and brag about the $140 billion increase in domestic discretionary spending. And so overall, we're going to get a 13% increase in discretionary spending this year. Both parties are going to go home and brag about all the government spending they're bringing home.
So really, this is a ruse on the public.
Yeah, and the public's going to get the bill. We're going to see the budget deficit probably at or a little more than $1 trillion this year. Keep in mind, the deficit a year ago or a year and a half ago was $450 billion approximately. This past year, it was $666 billion. We're heading towards $1 trillion. And I'm telling you, with Social Security and Medicare costs rising so fast, we're heading towards a deficit of $2 trillion a year within the next decade.
So is that putting our toe in the water of a recession?
Well, it's at some point it's going to cause worse than a recession. I mean, you're heading towards Greece, a Greece-like collapse. You get to a certain point where a country cannot sustain trillion-dollar deficits forever. At a certain point, something's got to give. And we did have a trillion-dollar deficit in 2009, but that was temporary due to the recession, which thankfully eventually went away. These trillion-dollar deficits are structural, and they're only going to get worse. And members of Congress right now just frankly don't seem to care.
Yeah, and that's the attitude that kind of drives me crazy. I mean, they don't even want to answer questions about that. They obviously do, the shuck and jive routine on that question, and they move on to something else, and nobody really sits down and has an intellectual conversation about where we're headed to.
I think lawmakers have concluded that voters don't really care about spending and deficits. I think this is based on President Trump getting elected while promising not to touch most major government spending. And, you know, he said he's not going to touch Social Security, he's not going to touch Medicare, he's going to increase defense, and he won. And so I think lawmakers are concluding that the public just doesn't care. I don't think it's that simple. I think, you know, once the deficit starts heading towards $1 trillion, I think we're going to see voters start to care about this a lot, especially because at some point soon, this is going to start raising interest rates. It's going to start pushing up the deficit to a point where taxes may start to rise. It's going to slow down the economy. That people are going to notice.
You would have to admit that as that number goes up and you get into the trillion-dollar level, options are diminish.
Yeah, exactly. There's really no way to balance the budget within even the next 10 years at this point unless something very drastic is done. In fact, in order to balance the budget in 10 years, you'd have to eliminate more than a quarter of the federal government in 2027. And so
that's striking. That
exactly.
That one statistic alone is striking.
Well, and especially because because we're getting to the point where nearly half, or actually the majority of government spending soon, is going to be Social Security, Medicare, and interest on the debt. There's not a lot of support out there for reforming Social Security, Medicare, and interest on the debt, but they're growing so fast, far beyond what the trust funds could fund or what people paid into the system, and there's no constituency for reforming this stuff, which means ultimately either taxes are going to rise or deficits are going to continue rising.
It's almost as if that our plan is we're going to start buying lottery tickets.
Is. I mean, it's lawmakers right now are just so short-sighted on this. They're focused on November. Let the future take care of itself. And, you know, I liked a lot of the tax cuts that were passed. I thought they were good economic policy. I thought they were good tax policy. But if you keep spending like this, there's no way you can sustain the tax cuts. At a certain point, the math.
Yeah,
and
math has no emotion and it doesn't lie. Brian Riedel, thank you so much from the Manhattan Institute. We really appreciate your insight.
Thank you very much.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.